In our tefillah tonight, we talked about the word ge'ula many times. How would you translate ge'ula into English? And we pray, some people call this atchata de ge'ula, which means like the beginning of redemption. There's a big argument. What do we say? Is it? Isn't it? I think at the Seder about 2 weeks and 5 days ago, we talked about that also, didn't we? Yeah. Wasn't that the fourth cup? No. The fourth Gula is the fourth cup, right? Yeah. How come you're all nodding? Yeah. Is Gula the fourth cup? Is it the fifth cup? No, it's not. What is it? It's the third cup, isn't it? All right. If it's the third cup and there's four cups, I'm not. You thought I was going to talk about the fifth cup. That's old-fashioned Zionism. I'm talking about our title. For some reason, Gula is the third cup. And Gula is not the goal. We pray for Gula as cup number three. What's cup number four? Not Veveti. We'll go over them. The first cup was Votzeti. It's getting started. Then Vitzalti. Cup number three is Gula. Cup number four. I want the whole phrase. V'lekachti etchem li la'am, v'ayti lechem l'Elohim. That's the covenant of the Torah. In other words, the first three is the Exodus, getting out of Egypt. V'lekachti etchem li la'am, v'ayti lechem l'Elohim. That's Har Sinai. And then the fifth cup, v'ayti etchem el aretz. That's afterwards. But the fourth cup is key. And that's the question. Is Gula the goal? Or does Gula simply enable you to get to the next step? Where in Sefer Vayikra do we have a topic of Gula? Anyone remember? It's a major topic towards the end. It's going to be there in a week or two. In Parshat Bahar, what did we talk about? If someone goes into debt, never happens in Israel. No, it actually happens a lot. But let's say someone goes in, like, let's say you're playing Monopoly. And you go into debt. And you have to sell your property. Correct? There's a commandment. Let's say your neighbor, your friend, your relative has lost his property. He lost his mortgage. And you want to help him get back on his feet. What do you need to do? Okay. You have to help him buy back his property. What's the name of that person? He's called a Goel. There's a whole Megillah about it, isn't there? Remember Megillat Ruth? Right? A Goel, once the person has his property back, then what can he do? He can start working again. He can work a field. That's Gula enables you to the next step. In order to become God's nation, first you have to become free. You have to become a nation. Once you're a nation, then what do you do with your nationhood? Let's say I'll give you a bad example. Somebody has a shalom is ill in the hospital. Right? You pray that he recovers. But the goal of recovery, it's important itself, but once you recover and out of the hospital, then what do you have to do? Return to normal life. Now, I want to use that to explain my title. Anyone remember the title? Okay. There's a vision of a nation and a nation with a vision. Okay. We've been living for 2,000 years with a vision of a nation, correct? But we've been in the hospital. We've been ill as a nation. We don't have our own country. We don't have our identity. We've been praying for thousands of years to return to nationhood, to have our country back, to be sovereign again. We haven't had sovereignty for 2,000 years. Now that we have our sovereignty, now you have Gula, that's not the goal, that's simply a step forward. Now that you have a nation, what do you do with it? Understand the difference? And therefore, the title is, there's a vision of a nation and a nation with a vision. And there was an argument, Machlokes, you know what that is. It's our pastime. Over 100 years ago, way more than that, all right, there was a Machlokes between two famous Zionistic leaders. One was Herzl, and the other Rav Kook. There were different camps, but I'll just use those two as classic. Herzl's vision was what? He had a vision of a nation. It was the late 1800s. Jewish life in Europe wasn't so great. Lots of trouble. It wasn't so great beforehand, but it was like getting really bad. You know your Jewish history. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here. And what was his chab? He knew Yiddish. What was his chab? What's the reason for all of our troubles? What? How come everyone hates us? Because we don't have our own nation. If we only had our own nation, it could be in Uganda. But if we had sovereignty, if we had our own nation, if we'd have self-definition, we wouldn't be schlepping around in other people's countries. If we could be our own country, that would solve all of our problems. And therefore, he began what's called secular Zionism. Now, there's an argument among the Zionists where to make that country. But he had a vision of a nation, which was a good idea. Did it work? That's a different question. Now, Rav Kook argued and said, it's important to have a vision of a nation, but if that nation doesn't have a vision, there's no point in establishing a nation without a vision. You understand that point? Just having a nation for the sake of itself, what's the point? Rav Kook was arguing that nation has to have a vision. If you don't have a vision, if you want to go back to the analogy of someone ill, if someone ill needs to recover, he needs what to recover for. If you give him hope that after you recover, you have something to look forward to, that helps the recovery, doesn't it? It's called Bikur Cholim. It's ask anyone in psychology or in medicine. If you're depressed and have nothing to look forward to, you don't recover. If you have a goal, once I return and healthy again, once there's Geula, what can help Geula come along is having a vision. What do you do once you have Geula? Then the question became, what is the vision of that nation? Herzl didn't go that far. Why? He said, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. First, let's have a nation. And let's argue as a people what our vision is going to be. But he said it was enough first to start with a nation. Now, that argument, that was my title. Title make sense? Now, in modern Jewish history, we're right, in my opinion, we're right at those crossroads. We've established a nation, and we're having a tremendous argument. I think it's a healthy argument if it's done maturely, over what's the vision of that nation. And it's a healthy argument as long as we argue, maturely. I have a line I like to use. You've heard of Sinat Chinam? In English it's called Sinat Chinam. Okay? And there's always good reasons for Sinat Chinam. You understand? How do you translate Sinat Chinam? Basically. And there's always good reasons for it. Read all the Jewish papers. There's always reasons to throw this rabbi out, and this not good, and that's not good. There's always good reasons for it. And that's the problem with it. There's a story in Chumash about it. The brothers had great reasons to hate Yosef. He was taking Lashon Hara and everything, He was a wrong kid, he wasn't chosen. There's always good reasons for Sinat Chinam. And that's one of the big dangers. Now, in our argument, it's important to understand why we're arguing. Sometimes it's healthy you argue, because we're having a legitimate argument, what's the vision of this state? Now, I want to go back a couple thousand years, way before that. There was a very similar argument between the people and the Navi Shmuel. Remember the Navi Shmuel? He was pretty good, right? He was from, he was a chief rabbi, he was a leader, the whole thing. Problems with getting a little bit old. Happens to us. And the people came to Shmuel with a great idea. What was the people's great idea? The people came to Shmuel and said,
we want a king,
which really meant we want a strong central government. Because we've been living with this fire department for the last 100 years, called the Shoftim. And whenever there was trouble, what happened? We had trouble. And every once in a while, we had a Shofet, and he won some battles. But it's been going, the Plishtim are coming in and taking over our country. In the end of Sefer Shoftim, at the beginning of Shmuel, the Plishtim have infiltrated the entire coast. They're into the lowlands, like near Beit Shemesh. Why they wanted to go to Ramat Beit Shemesh, I'm not sure, but that's where David Goliath had been there, up in Israel. Jordan's coming in from the east. We're in a big pinch. And the people are saying, this is so bad, you know what? We need a king. What did Shmuel say back? You don't need a king, right? Who's your king? Not your king. In other words, the people have a vision of a nation very similar to Herzl. They want a king who's going to fight their battles. And Shmuel's telling you don't need a king, God's your king. And if you're having trouble with your enemies, what's the solution? What? Pray to God. And how does he prove it in Sefer Shoftim? Look, every time you left God, that's what caused the trouble. And whenever you prayed to God and finally came to Shul and Davin, God sent a Shofet and he saved you. So if you don't want to have problems anymore, if you don't want wars and you want a good, solid, safe country, what do you need to do? Don't leave God. Don't follow other gods. Everything will be fine. It sounds good. The people didn't agree with Shmuel, did they? Who else disagreed with Shmuel? Shmuel had a bar plukta. You know what that means? Shmuel had a very authoritative opinion against him. Who was that? Hashem. What did Hashem tell Shmuel to do? Give him a king. The argument between God and Shmuel was, is there a value of a nation even if it doesn't have the right vision? It's one stage at a time. And that's the idea I'm talking about. Gula is the third cup. It's an important cup. Because sometimes, before you can have a nation with a vision, there's still a value of a vision of a nation. You sang about this at your Seder. You might not remember. Remember that song, Dayenu? Dayenu doesn't make sense, does it? What do we say? And there's one Dayenu that no one has a question on. That's the Dayenu. If God only gave us their money and didn't give us the Torah, that would have been enough. I've never seen a question on that one. But the other ones, if he only brought us close to our Sinai and didn't give us the Torah, if he only split the sea and didn't give us the land of Israel, Dayenu there doesn't mean it would be enough, full stop. It would be enough to say thank you. What Dayenu is saying is that there's 15 stages of redemption. It's step by step in redemption. It's a slow process. And there's importance to recognize every stage in redemption. It works in stages. It's like a step at a time. Remember Shira Malot? There's 15 steps in the Beit HaMikdash. You take it one step at a time. You don't jump right to the top. And it's important to recognize that there's value in every step in redemption. And therefore, there's a need to say thank you even for partial redemption. But as we say thank you for stage number four, there's also the vision of stage number five. But you can't go from 1 to 15 overnight. But you can't stop at a certain point. You have to say thank you and look forward. And God was telling Shmuel that give him a king. They're politically mature. They want a kingdom. Now, let them start. And your job as a religious leader, not to fight them, but flow with them. Pretty much that was Rav Kook's conclusion afterwards. Also, that once we're starting the secular state, instead of fighting them, most of the rabbis were against it, let's work with them. And that was God's answer to Shmuel. If in Marv tonight, we mumble that pasuk. At least in Chutzlars they do. You know what I'm talking about? In Sefer Shmuel, God explains to Shmuel why he's giving them a king even though they're asking for the wrong reason. What are the people saying? The people are saying, they're taking the same data that Shmuel's taking. Shmuel's saying, listen, every time things were bad, you prayed and things got better. The people take the same data and say, listen, every time we had a strong central leader, right, things were good. Whenever we didn't have a leader, things were bad. What do we need? A strong leader all the time. Everyone has the same data. The question is how to interpret the data. And they're saying, let's take that data. What's that proof? We need a king. We need a leader all the time. That's a king. Now, is there a commandment to have a king? No. What's the answer you can't go wrong with? Now, is there a commandment in Chumash to set up a judicial system?
Yes.
Give me the pasuk. Shoftim v'shoftim titen lecha b'chol sharecha. What book is that in? In Devarim, right? Devarim has lots of laws about setting up a nation. Of course, there's a mitzvah to have a judicial system. Is there a mitzvah to have a king? Also Sefer Devarim. Yeah. It doesn't start Som Tasei Melech. It begins when you come to land and you say, I want a king. Kochol HaGoyim. Then Som Tasei Melech HaMelech. Now there's two ways to understand it. Some people understand it like Eshet Yifator. Like it's a terrible idea, but if you really want to, okay. No, sort of like talking, like really you shouldn't have a king. God's your king. But if you really, really want a king, okay, but limit his power. I think Abarbanel goes in that direction. But there's another approach that the Rambam has, is that you're not obligated to have a king if you're not ready for one. In other words, if you come in your land and you have this yetzer, if you have this desire to become politically mature and establish a nation, then you're obligated to set up the proper type of a kingdom. But you can't obligate someone to establish a kingdom if the people don't want to. I'll give you a really bad example. Hope I don't hurt anyone's feelings here. I think some people hold it's a commandment to get married. At least for, I think so, something like that. Now, what I want to claim is that if you're only getting married because you're being commanded, but you don't want to, you're not hired. Understand my point? You know, marriage begins when someone wants to become married. Then there's a chiv. I'll give a worst example. You won't like this for sure. Okay. Is there a chiv to live in the land of Israel, according to some people? Okay. Now, if you don't want to live there, you're not chayav. I know I get in trouble for Mizrahi for saying this. If you have this desire to live there, then come and live there. It's got to come from the bottom up. But we have enough miserable people. We don't need any more. Now, if someone wants to be part of this big movement and come and live there, then you're chayav, then you have a chiyuv, and you fulfill mitzvah by living there. But if you're only going there because you have a technical chiyuv, like yeshiva bachur kind of thing, then you miss the whole point. And that's what I'm getting about a machut, about a kingdom. You need to have political maturity. You need a movement like Herzl, meaning you need a movement like secular Zionism, where the Jewish people, it's burning inside them, we want to have a national existence. We want to have a country. We want to be a people. We want to be sovereign. We want to be the masters of our destiny. We don't want to be schlepping around under someone else's. It's like a teenager growing up. I want to move out of the house, have my own apartment. I want to be myself. It's a healthy, it's called maturing. And sometimes if you follow Chumash, the same, when we come out of Egypt, we have a vision to become a nation. When we leave Egypt, what do we want? We just want food on the table. We want a lighter workload. They went to Moshe, we want to be a nation. They said, Moshe, we want a lighter workload. They don't cry out to God, we want to be a nation. They cry out to God, our workload's too hard. And what did they tell Moshe all through the desert? We want to go back home to Egypt. They have better food there. Who wants to eat the soya stuff in the desert? The manna. They don't see the bigger picture. It takes hundreds of years till the nation slowly matures and finally wants a king. And God's telling Shmuel that people are finally maturing. They want a nation. They want a king. Flow with it. Work with it. And your job is to guide them in the right direction. And the point I want to make, and I will see the source sheet, is that there, even though we need a nation with a vision, even though we need to get to cup number four of Har Sinai, we want to be a nation serving God, there's a value in itself in Gula. There's a value in becoming free in order to become God's nation. But it's a value that's worth saying hallow for. And it begins in Chumash. Now, I gave you a source sheet about what makes the Holy Land holy, about Dusha. I'll summarize because it's, we don't have too much time. But the word Kadosh, like we talk about Eretz HaKodesh, how do you translate the word Kadosh? Okay. Holy with a H or with a WH? Holy or sacred? Or special. It's very hard. Those are pretty much Christian translations. If you follow Chumash, whenever we have holiness, it's a type of separation. When you're separating something from a larger group. And I'll trace it. Don't look at the source sheet yet, because otherwise it's not fair. Where's the first time we find Kedusha in the Torah? The very first time where Chumash uses the word Kadosh, when something is Kadosh. Remember? Where in Bereshit? Ah, very good. On day number 7, after creating, what does God do? He blesses the seventh day. First there's a blessing, and then Kedusha. Do we have Kedusha again in Sefer Bereshit? You're right, we don't. That's a standard for Sefer Shemot. We have what? Do we have Brachot in Sefer Bereshit? Remember? Vayvarech, and then Vaykadesh. Are there blessings in Sefer Bereshit? To no end. There's tons of them, aren't there? Blessings everywhere you turn. It ends with God's blessing, the parents are blessing, there's even curses, but it's all about blessing. Right? When we get to Sefer Shemot, we go to Kiddush. We have very few blessings, we have primarily Kiddushah. Got that? Now, there's 7 days of the week. What does God do? First, He gives potential. A blessing is giving someone potential. In fact, what's the first blessing that Abraham Avinu receives? What do you think I'm going to say? You want to say the land of Israel. That's not Chumash. What's the first blessing Abraham gets? V'heyeh bracha, that you'll be a blessing. The greatest blessing someone can have is that he can help others. The greatest blessing is to be a giver, not a receiver. A blessing is not about receiving something. Blessing is being able to give. The greatest blessing is being in a position where you're able to help other people. We'll see why it's so important to Abraham Avinu. And through Abraham being chosen, God will bring blessing to all nations. Now, go back to Shabbat. First, God gives potential to the day. and then he separates it. Whenever we find Kedusha, and I want to use Shabbat as an example, God separates one item from a larger group. There's 7 days of the week. God separates one of those days and elevates it, gives it a special status. But what's the purpose of that separation? By separating one day of the week, that one day of the week becomes the funnel that brings God into every day of the week. You with me? If you've kept Shabbat, you know what I'm talking about. It's called Cholet, not Cholet. In other words, when you make Shabbat special, that doesn't downgrade the 6 days of the week, does it?
No. Okay?
Shabbat becomes the funnel that brings God into every day of the week. It sort of formats your week religiously. And therefore, whenever I have separation of Kedusha, I'm separating one item from a larger group, elevating it in the service of God, but the purpose of the separation is to bring God into the group I'm separated from. I'll take that Shabbat. The next time we have Kedusha in the Torah, no more in Sefer Bereshit. Right. Except don't tell me the Kedusha, that's a separate, yeah. Yeah, but that's a different context. But it's the same idea, but a different context. That's separated for a different job. It's an old profession. No. In Sefer Shemot, I'm sorry, yeah, do we have Kedusha? First time?
Sure.
Before then. You know that. It's a burning issue. The burning bush, Perek Gimel. How's it begin? Take off your shoes. Why? The land you're on is Advat Kodesh. Where's Moshe standing? No, not Moria. That's maybe Midrashic. Where's he standing according to Chumash? Where's the burning bush take place? At the Sneh. Where's the Sneh? At Har Elohim Chareva, the first line of chapter 3. The burning bush is Har Sinai, isn't it? You knew that, didn't you? The burning bush is Har Sinai. And that happened. Isn't Har Sinai a burning bush later on? Doesn't Moshe go into a ball of fire? Right? And even though Moshe goes up into this fire, he doesn't get consumed. And the people think he did get consumed. The burning bush sets the stage for Mount Har Sinai. But that site becomes Mount Sinai, where we receive the Torah. Do we ever leave Mount Sinai? Do we or not? Well, physically we do. According to Ramban, we don't leave. What do? We take it with us. What replaces Mount Sinai, if you read the Ramban? Or study Chumash? That's the Mishkan, isn't it? The famous Ramban, he's right on the mark. The Mishkan is a mini Har Sinai, and it travels with us. It travels for a long time with us. And finally it settles down where? What? The Mishkan is portable and temporary. Okay. That's right. And it ends up in Yerushalayim, doesn't it? In Devarim HaMakom Asher Yivchar Hashem L'Shaken Shmo Sham. It's going to end up in one permanent place. It's going to be the Beit HaMikdash. And therefore, Har Sinai, I'm separating space. One place is called a shul, because the shul is a mikdash ma'at. I separate one physical place. I give it a special status, like a shul or a mikdash. But once I separate one piece of territory and give it a special status, what does it do to the neighborhood? Forget real estate. And maybe it helps real estate also. It elevates the entire neighborhood. I make the shul special because the shul becomes the funnel that brings God into every home. You understand how a shul works in a community? You come to shul to leave, but you bring the shul to the home. If you remember, Shemini Atzeret says it all. What do we do in Shemini Atzeret? We take the sukkah into your home, right? We separate for a week into a sukkah, and then remember you move the kelim into the home on Shemini Atzeret? You bring your sukkah into your home, and your home becomes a sukkah. That's called tushat. So that's the second tushat. Yeah. And the next Tusha is, that's going to be Perek Yud Gimel. Or Kaddish Shel Kol Bechor, setting aside the firstborn. Later that's going to become Shevet Levi. God separates a tribe. Which tribe? The tribe of Levi. First one is going to be the firstborn, then it becomes a tribe. There's 12 tribes. One tribe is separated from the other 12. For what reason? Okay. Because that one tribe is going to be elevated, Shevet Levi, and then later Kohanim, to serve and bring the liaison and the funnel to bring God to the other 11 tribes. They'll be the educators, the teachers. That's Shevet Levi, isn't it? Now, if you paid attention, we have Kedusha in three realms. What was the first one? Shabbat is Kedusha in what realm? In the realm of time. In Hebrew, Kedushat Zman. The second one was Kedushat Makom, holy space, or sacred space, or separated space. Kedushat Makom. And the third one was Kedushat Adam. Got that? But in all three cases, what's happening? I'm separating one item from a larger group, elevating it in the service of God, but the purpose of the separation and elevation is to become the funnel to the group it was separated from. Now, I'll give you an example from show last week. Those three levels of Kedusha, what's the highest level of Kedushat Adam? So we have, you know, man, then we have Am Yisrael, then we have Levim and Kohanim. What's like the top, the highest level of Kedusha? No, of man. Of what? That's called the Kohen Gadol. Okay. As far as space goes, so there's the land of Israel. There's a lower, I'm just joking. There's a lower east side. There's, no, but we go, there's the land of Israel, there's Yerushalayim. But what's the highest level of Kedushat Makom? On top of Harbai, the Kodesh Kodeshim. And in the realm of time, so Shabbat's good, but Yom Kippur is Shabbat Shabbaton. When do all three come together? We read about Rishul last week, didn't we? Because what happens in Parshat Achrimot? The Kohen Gadol on Shabbat Shabbaton goes into the Kodesh Kodeshim. It's at the center of Sefer Vayikra, of Kedusha. But what's the purpose of that Kedusha? From there, the Kedusha emanates. The Mikdash is not God in a cage. Again, it's not when you go to shul. I remember growing up, and I grew up in Akron, Ohio. There was a sign: when you leave shul, please return the yarmulke to the. Remember, there's a yarmulke. Please make sure you return the yarmulke, or I say return normal speed, or resume normal speed. The goal of coming to shul is not to leave. It's not God in a cage. It's not going to an old age home. The idea is you come to shul and you bring shul into your home. It's the same idea when calling him. In the same way, when God separates a nation, now we get to Har Sinai. What's God doing? In Chumash, there's 70 nations, aren't there? What's happening in Chumash? The first 11 chapters is about God and all humankind. And we end up with 70 nations. They scatter. But that's the nature of civilization, isn't it? God made man, he forms, you know, breakaway shuls. It starts with Hashkama Minyan, you know, and then you get Tinek. That's Migdal Bavel in a nutshell. Everyone first comes together, they're all davening, there's a bit of Yeshua, and then boom, and then expands. It's a healthy phenomena. That's how things grow. But there's 70 nations, aren't there? That's over. In fact, you can count to 70. Remember, there's 10 generations from Adam to Noah, and then from Noah after the flood, we all scatter. Then there's 10 generations from Shem to Avraham Avinu, and we end up with 70 nefesh going down to Egypt. There's 70 nations. God's going to pick one nation and enter a special relationship with that nation. For what purpose? Right. To bring blessing to the other nations. And that's one of the biggest issues that's plaguing, like that we're facing in Zionism today. On the one hand, it's called particularism. It's all about us. We have to be a nation. We have to be separate. But there's a value in our separation. Our separation is for the sake of other nations. It's not that God takes care of us and the heck with everybody else. God cares about all humankind, but for the sake of humankind, he's separating one nation, giving them a special status, that we become a vehicle through which we can spread this concept of God to mankind, but first we have to be who we are. So, and we're always torn between universalism, we care about everyone but ourselves, I'm like the American politics, but you know the problem. There's some Jews, they care about more about non-Jews than themselves, and there's some Jews who are just only about Jews, and who cares about the rest of the globe? Everyone hates us, and that's it. Okay. First, you have to grow up. Rav Chaim Sabato used to say all the time, he says, in children's education, first you have to build your home, and then decide how big your windows are going to be. But you can't, first you have to build a home. You have to be who you are. Once you're established, then you can open up yourself. The same thing. You know, at what stage do you go away to a secular school? Do you start in kindergarten already? You're learning with going? Or did you start high school and go away? In college, you go away? Remember all the questions. We go to YU or you go to a real college. I shouldn't say that. No one's taping this. I'm just joking. But you understand my point? At what stage are you mature enough that if I go and interact with other nations, with other people, I'm strong enough, right, to remain Jewish and I can have a positive effect on others? It works with Avram and Avimelech. But you can't start that way right away. First, you have to decide who you are. And therefore, that's exactly the challenges facing Israel today. First, we have to become who we are. We have to establish a nation. And if we weren't focusing on ourselves, we would never become a nation. But at a certain point, when we're established as a nation, then it's time to be involved with other nations. In biblical history, from the time of Yeshua, from the time we conquered the land, until King David, we don't find one friend, do we? Everyone hates us. In time of the Shoftim, every non-Jew is an enemy. We finally reach maturity when we establish this kingdom, for Shaul and then David. By the time David becomes king, they're all knocking on our door. Remember, Lebanon wants to make a peace treaty with us. They start, they get along. Egypt signs a treaty. Jordan signs a treaty, remember, with David. By the time we get to Shlomo, the Queen of Sheba is coming to visit. And we're not at war with anybody. Why? Because we're strong. But we have a tremendous influence on the other nations. But first, it takes a long time till we get there. And the question of what stage do you focus on yourself, on your own growth, and what stage you start being involved with other nations, it's a very healthy dilemma. And that's why many of our arguments stay exactly on that issue. Now, I want to conclude with finally the source sheet, and I want to get to this idea of where we see this idea in Chumash, this idea of a vision of a nation and a nation with a vision. The highlight of Chumash, in my opinion, is, I think you were there, there's a covenant we make at Har Sinai. Remember when you said Naseh V'Nishma? Long time ago. You forgot about it, but you were there. Now, when we say Naseh V'Nishma, what are we saying? What's the covenant at Har Sinai? So the contract are the Luchot HaBrit. But before we get the Ten Commandments, we enter a covenant with God at Har Sinai in chapter 19. And that's the first source. We get out of Egypt. It takes 6-7 weeks. We get all ready. We get to Har Sinai. God calls Moshe up and says, here's the proposition. Go tell the people, look what I did for you. Look, I brought you here, etc. And now, and that's Pasuk Hey. It says, Vata. Im Shema Tishbu Bukoli. Are you as a people, are you ready to obey me? Are you now ready to be obedient? They haven't been so obedient since they left Egypt. Ushmar Temet Briti. Are you willing to be a covenantal partner? And then you'll be my skula, you'll be my treasure nation from all the nations, even though I'm the God of all the land. I follow Ibn Ezra. Ki sometimes means even though. Rashi would say, because I own the land, it's like a motivator. Ibn Ezra says, no, he's saying that even though I'm the God of all the land, I'm entering a special relationship with you. God's making a proposition. Do you as a people, look what I did for you, are you willing now to work for me? Do you want to enter an eternal covenant with God to be his people? What should follow now? For what reason? If you accept this covenant, what will you be for me? Well, what's a Goy Kadosh? Based on it? Separated from what? From all the other. That's Kili Kol Aretz. Even though I'm the God of all the nations, I'm going to separate you. For what reason? To be the funnel that will bring God. You have to be God's model nation. Okay. That will make you a Mamlechet Kohanim. What's a classic translation of Mamlechet Kohanim? A kingdom of priests means everyone's a rabbi. That was Golden Meir's old line, remember? The older line? You know, I'm a president of 200,000 presidents or something like that. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a different way to translate Mamlechet Kohanim. A Kohen means what in Hebrew? A Kohen is a priest or a minister, not necessarily to God. Anyone in a position of authority, but working for a higher authority. Basically a minister. A Kohen, Malki Tzedek was a Kohen to what God? There's no such thing as a God without a Kohen. Because if the God didn't have a Kohen, no one would know about the God, whether the God exists or not. So Malki Tzedek is a Kohen to El Elyon. Moshe's father-in-law, what was his job? He was Kohen Midian. Yosef's father-in-law. All the Mechutanim. Yosef Shver. What was Yosef's? It was Kohen On. Understand? A Kohen is someone in the service of a God. He represents the God. Now, in general, most gods, whether they exist or not, need someone representing them. They need Kohanim. There's no religion without a priest who represents the God. Usually, gods are represented by people. There's a revolutionary idea at Har Sinai. And what's God saying? Instead of being represented by an individual, what's God going to do? He's going to be represented by a nation. There'll be a nation representing God, a sovereign kingdom, a mamlacha, not a kingdom of priests, but a priestly kingdom. That was a nation that represents God, not just an individual. Because a nation has a big advantage over an individual. Know the big advantage? Well, there's a quantitative one and a qualitative one. Quantitative one, it's a lot. But qualitatively, individuals, they don't last forever, do they? Admei Vesrim. Nations can be eternal. Correct? If God wants an eternal relationship, if God wants a nation to be there forever, to talk about God and bring this idea of God to civilization, I need a nation that's there forever. A nation can be eternal, but how can a nation remain eternal? What do you need to do? Well, you have to have children. I think it's one of the mitzvot, which is just for us. And we have to teach our children Torah. Read Tehillim Ayin Chet one time. It's all about that. You mumbled it at the Seder, remember? Yishlach ba mevrav azam, yishlach at malachei ra'im. I give you homework. Tehillim Ayin Chet 78. That's where the pasuk comes from. That parak, especially the first 8 lines, is the essence of the Seder. About our need. That part of being Jewish is keeping Judaism going. The two most expensive mitzvot we have is having children and making weddings, isn't it? They're the essence of Judaism, because part of being Jewish is keeping it going to the next generation and keeping the Masara going and teaching. Education is, but the responsibility, not just that you being Jewish, but keeping it going, that's a mamlechet kohanim, you're God's people forever. But on top of that, you represent God as a people. Because just like an individual representing God, if you're serving God, does God have higher expectations on your behavior? Give me an example of somewhere in Chumash where, because you're Kadosh and you represent God, I'm holding you to a higher level of day-to-day behavior. Anywhere there, because you're Kadosh, here's how I want you to behave? How about this week's Parsha? What are we reading? Ki Kadosh, and therefore what? Whoa, just read the list. We don't paskin by a lot of them. Like, lo terech rachil ba'amecha. We don't, it's only a diaraisa. We don't, I'm just joking. I can't take it seriously. There's a whole list of laws about individual behavior, how you behave. Because you're kadosh, you're in the service of God, I'm holding you to a higher standard. God holds us on a double standard because we're serving Him. If we talk about God and claim to be His people, we better be top notch. For example, all nations, remember that contract we signed in Har Sinai? No, not to kill and not to steal. It's on the list here. There's a list here. Lo tirzach, lo tinach, lo tignov, lo tenebrech. Killing, stealing, adultery, and lying, right? That's universal. It's in every movie, isn't it? Find me a movie that doesn't have that. Even PGs have it. God doesn't like that, but that's... What's special for us in the Ten Commandments? That's universal. The last one. That's Judaism, which is what? What's the last one? Don't even think about it. It's called preventive medicine, isn't it? But Lo Tachmud is a long one. That's hard. Whatever it is prevent. Because what's going to lead to the first four? As preventive medicine, so you don't get to Lo Tirzach, Lo Tinach, Lo Tignov, don't even think about it. Don't get it out of your mind. It's a different way of life. But what I'm getting at is that God's holding us to a higher standard in our individual behavior. But because we serve God as a nation, we have laws about our national behavior. We have laws about how our king, how our political leaders have to act, don't we? The laws of a king, of course you have to have some type of national leadership. You want a monarchy, you want you pick what form of government. But whoever your governmental leaders are, we're holding them to a higher standard. We have to have a judicial system, but We represent God not only through our individual behavior, but through our national behavior. We have a special economic system with laws like Shemitah. We have laws of social justice. We have laws for holidays. We have laws about how we go to war, don't we? Where do we find all those laws? They're all in Sefer Dvarim. What's unique about being a Mamlechet Kohanim, not a kingdom of priests, but a priestly kingdom, we serve God at the national level. It's not easy, but it's half of Sefer Dvarim and half of being Jewish. And those laws had been dormant for years. But now that we have nationhood again, and we have a country, and we have an army, and we have social welfare, and we have... How do you keep Shabbos as a nation? How do you run an army and keep Shabbat? How do you run a police force and keep Shabbat? Do you write reports or not? How do you run electricity for a whole country and keep Shabbat? The problems Israel is facing today, halakha problems, you can't solve them the way you did things in Europe. Don't have a Shabbos guy do it. There's some people in Israel who think you can still run the country that way. But the way you think of Pesach, the way the rabbis have to make decisions nowadays is very different, because you're not living under someone else's authority, you're your own kingdom. And the way you run your country, the way you tax, the way you take care of welfare and things like that, again, you can argue how to do it the best way, but the way you represent God is not only in your individual behavior, it's also in your national behavior, which is a tremendous challenge that we're facing all the time. And therefore we have arguments all the time, and they're healthy arguments. What do we do with our resources? Everyone wants to help everybody, but you got to balance your book at the end of the day. So what do you prioritize? And Israel's troubled by that all the time, but those are healthy arguments. We should argue, but we have to argue maturely. Now, so that was the idea of Brit Sinai, which is a revolutionary idea that we're going to be God's people forever, serving Him. But the idea of Kedusha, God separating one nation, we're separated for the sake of other nations. That's God's opening line to Abraham Avinu. But there's a need to first be who you are. First, you have to be separated, which begins first with a blessing, with the potential. And therefore, God blesses us to get our job done. Now, so we have on source A, we did source B already. Those are the three of Kedusha. Shabbat is a great example. Shabbat, remember, Shabbat is Kedusha in the realm of time, isn't it? And the Mishkan is Kedusha in the realm of space. Remember, Shabbat and time go together, and then people. Now, when God first picked Avraham Avinu, let's read, everyone knows these Tzukim, look at source D. I want to show you how everything is right in the beginning of Chumash. We begin with God choosing a nation. What's God tell Avraham Avinu? Lech lecha mi'artzecha, begin a journey. Time out for a minute. That word lech lecha, you don't appreciate how important it is. Walk. It starts with walking, right? That went back to Gan Eden. God's bitalech in Gan Eden. There's a mitzvah lelecha bidrachav, isn't there? V'alachta bidrachav. Lelecha bidarchei Hashem. Walking is walking with God. Before Brit Milah, he talech lefanayv yetamim. Now, what's the word for Jewish law? We have a law book, don't we? In general, in English, what's the book word for law? Law. In Hebrew, what is it? Walking. You ever wonder why Jewish law is called halacha? It's a strange word for a law, isn't it? But now it makes perfect sense. What are we doing? How do we walk with God? Because Chumash has lots of principles. Boy, and sometimes they're conflicting. What did the rabbis do what has Chazal done? They study Torah. They proceed from their study basic principles. Sometimes they're conflicting principles. They study those principles, develop them, like Avot Nisikin, or Avot. They derive principles, and then they apply those principles in real time over generations. The conclusion of what do we do in this situation, in this time period, based on these principles, the bottom line decision is called how we walk with God. And they become our decisions, and that later becomes Shulchan Aruch. But what do we call it beautifully? Halacha. And therefore, it's not by chance that the life of Avraham begins with Lech Lecha. It ends with the Akedah, which is also a Lech Lecha, El Har Moriah. And Avraham's commanded, he's a Lech Lecha. That was a timeout. But I want to make sure you understand how beautiful halacha, the concept of Halacha is. Now, God tells Avraham Lech Lecha. Then what's God? What should God say? What should Avraham expect here next? God tells Avraham, begin a journey. Where? God says, where? I'll show you. Put in GPS, where I'll show you. Now, what should follow? If Avram's normal, what should he be wondering? Not where am I going to, I'll go where I go to, but what's the purpose of the journey? Now, if he's like a kid, he'd be asking, what's in it for me? What do I get out of it? If he's mature, what's he asking? What's the purpose of this journey? So is the next line going to be, but this is the beginning of the life of Avraham Avinu, and the beginning of of Judaism beginning. It says, begin a journey. And is the next line going to be, what's going to be your reward? Or is the next line going to be, what's the purpose of the journey? What are you starting? What's the next line of Chumash? The Eschan L'Goy Gadol. Is that reward or is that purpose? You're not smiling. It's such an argument among the commentators. That gets most people look at it, what? Oh, what a reward. What's in it for us? Oh, we get to be great. We get to be great. Or is that the essence of Chumash? God wants a nation to serve Him. And why is God entering a relationship with Avraham Avinu? God wants a nation forever, but He's got to plant the seeds of the nation. Pun intended. Remember Zerah Avraham Avdo? And God's telling Avraham Avinu, ultimately I want a nation. Now to become that nation, what needs to happen? Whoa. It's going to take that's going to be the first covenant called Brit Ben Abtarim. To become God's nation, you got to go through basic training. You don't start with a land. You start with a vision. Now, both those ideas, the vision of a nation, Beschal Goy Gadol. But a nation with a vision is going to be Brit Ben Abtarim. All the covenants God makes with Abraham Avinu. And the story with Stone about doing Mishpat and Staka, of why he's chosen. But I'm just, then what's God say? I'll make you a great nation, but that's the vision. You'll bring blessing. I'll bless you. I'm going to guide your history. I'll bless you to enable you to get the job done. And you'll be a blessing. That's the greatest blessing. Not what you receive, what you're able to do. And through you, I can bring blessing to other nations because What happens in general? If you follow world history, nations tend to do bad things, don't they? They do evil things. Just read the news. Now, how can you fix things like that? I remember reading a story that there was a society that was really corrupt and terrible, and God was so upset he just washed the whole thing out. You ever read that story? Yeah. And then what happened afterwards? Everything got wiped out. So one little family was saved. A couple animals in there. And what does God promise to do? It's the best example of anthropomorphism, of God acting like a human, or describing God in human terms. He does something, regrets what he does, destroys it, and then he regrets that he regretted. Is that Chumash? And what's he promise? I'm not going to do that again. And that's the first covenant of the Torah. That's called Brit Keshet, isn't it? And God promises, I'm never going to start over again. So what can God do now the next time things go bad? What can't he do anymore? He can't start over. But he can't let it continue to go bad. If things go bad, what's he have to do? We have to fix it. Now, God can intervene directly. He can bring a plague. He can bring plagues. He can bring bad ways. But before that happens, what would God rather see? He'd rather man fix himself. Remember God's debate? Stone is really bad, isn't it? Society stone is almost like the flood. There's like, really, God, he's not a happy deity, is he? Yeah. But he's deliberating. The what? Should I destroy the city or shouldn't I? And who does he share his deliberation with? With Avram Avinu. Remember that? Yeah. That's the story of stone. And what are they talking about? How many people are needed in the city to save the entire city? If I can, God tells, and Avram had this discussion. Avram begins with 50, gets down to 10. He says, even if I find 10 righteous people in that city, I'll save the entire city. Why? Because behavior is contagious. And if there's 10 righteous, maybe tomorrow it'll be 15. God's hoping there'll be grassroots, it's called leadership. God's hoping that man will fix himself. And that's flipped the page over. That's source E. Okay? God tells Avram in source E. The Chumash tells us that God said, can I hide from Avram what I'm about to do? God's about to deliberate, should I or should I not destroy stone? He's deliberating, and he has to share his deliberation with Avram Avinu, because Avram has to understand why he's chosen. Why? What's the next line? Avram is going to become this great nation, Goy Gadol, and he'll bring blessing to mankind. That's exactly Lech Lecha. How is Avram going to bring blessing to mankind? The famous line, Pasuk Yutet, Ki Yedatid, I came to know him. God doesn't know, he came to know him in order. It's the purpose of being chosen, so that he'll command his children, and they their children, and they'll follow the way of God to do Tzedakah Mishpat, to do justice and right, in order that God's vision for Avram will come true. You see what the story of Sodom is telling us? We have to learn why Avram was chosen. Avram was chosen to be that model nation, that if there's a small group of people doing good, there's hope that people can learn from them. That's a tremendous responsibility. That's why we have 613 and they have 7. That's why we're being held to a higher standard. But that's the vision of the nation. A nation in the service of God, but you serve God by how you... Now, but first you have to become a nation. You understand why we're torn so much? Because what I'm saying sounds way too left-wing. For something Mizrahi, with the kippah surga and everything. Because without a nation, without a country, without an army, without being who you are first, you will never get to that. First you need gula. First you have to establish yourself as a nation. Once you have a nation, then you can have a message. But first you have to become a nation. And that's why we argue all the time. Where are we? Are we in survival mode? Are we still establishing the nation? Are we still in the process of gula? Are we past cup 3 and ready for cup 4? Right? Are we established now? We have a country. We have a nation. There's no longer an existential threat. We're established. Now what do we do with our nation? How can we have an impact on mankind? Are we going to help in high tech? Are we going to help in security? Are we going to help in agriculture? Are we going to help solve medical problems? Are we going to help everyone every time there's an earthquake? Are we going to come and send people to help? Right? That's also a vision. Not just to get PR, but those are real values. And what do we do with our funding? Yeah. So I'm trying to show you both values, both ideas are in Chumash, and it's important to understand the balance between them. And then finally, our time's up. So I want to conclude with Brit Milah, which is our first covenant. There's Brit Ben of Tarim, the covenant where God watches our history. To become God's people, we have to go through a little suffering, a lot of suffering, and learn from it. And remember, you were a slave in Egypt. That's going to be our motivator. It was to make sure our behavior is always good. We're always being told, remember, you were a slave in Egypt, and don't you dare do that to other people. That's like 20 times in Chumash. That's why we have to remember the Exodus every day. When we remember the Exodus, not just gratitude, oh, God did me a favor and I have to say thank you. It's remembering why he chose you. Why he put us into Egypt? To learn what it means to suffer so we don't do that to others. The rest is a whole shir and chumash. That's why the memory is every day, not just once a year. Remember, the daily memory is the main commandment. Once a year, we recharge our batteries. I'll just give you a quick analogy because Mother's Day is coming up. Yeah. Remember? Now, it's a machloket in America if you celebrate Mother's Day, isn't it? What's a machloket? That's chachamim. Shitat chachamim is every day is Mother's Day. Right? Then there's Rabbi Hallmark. He's a Tana. No Rabbi Hallmark? What's his opinion? Rabbi Hallmark holds? We celebrate Mother's Day once a year. How do we paskin? By Chachamim or Rabbi Hallmark? We're machmir, aren't we? And Mi'ikar Adin, what? Every day is Mother's Day. But to make sure that every day is Mother's Day, one day, that's Pesach, isn't it? That was Rabbi Lezim Azariah. He didn't understand why every day and every night until his Rebbe told him, L'man tiskor yom tzeitcha mitzan koi mechaecha. The reason I go crazy 7 days a year is to make sure I remember it every day. That's why the Rambam counts it as what? The yearly story and the daily commemory is one thing. What I'm getting at is that our history, we redeem our history. And we learn from our history, and we grow from our history. And if we suffered, we have to make sure we learn from there, not to do that to others. That's one way we serve God. That's Brit Ben Abtarim, Brit Milah. I'll just end with that. Remember, Talek Lefanei V'Atamim? Brit Milah begins with Avram's name change. You ever wonder what the Brit of Brit Milah is? What's the purpose of Brit Milah? What's Avram mean to him? It's God says, I'll be your God, you'll be my people. But look at the opening line. Pasuk Bet. In F. And God says, I'm going to make a Brit with you. What should follow? God tells Avram, I'm going to make a Brit with you. What should follow now? Reward or purpose? God says, you'll be an Av Hamon Goyim. Is that reward or purpose? What does Av Hamon Goyim mean? Is it a father of many nations or a father to many nations? Got it? Is God promising Avram, I'm making a brit so you'll be the father of Ishmael and Amalek and Esav and all these nations fighting with each other? I don't think so. God's saying, because we're talking about Brit Milah, but being God's people. Brit Yakim Bet Yitzchak, and that brit goes to Yaakov. That's our brit. But the purpose of the brit, that we need to be an Av Hamon Goyim, and Av also means a father. Like the father of modern, a father of modern medicine. Yosef, remember? Go tell daddy what? I'm in Egypt, and what's my job? I'm an Av to Paro. Remember? Yosef tells his brother, go tell daddy. I became an Av to Paro. I'm a father to Pharaoh, which means I'm his mentor. Lemech's three kids. One was the father of music. One was the father of metalwork. One was the father of farming, wasn't it? Like the father of modern medicine. And Av Hamon Goyim, which is Avram's namesake. What? God enters a brit with Avram to be a mentor, a nation of other people. It's a tremendous responsibility, and we can do that as individuals, but when you do it as a nation, it's much more difficult, but the potential is much greater. And therefore, after 2,000 years, we've returned to nationhood, which is a tremendous, it's a tremendous accomplishment, but it's a tremendous responsibility, and the topics are plaguing us all the time that we argue about, and we should argue, because they're important topics. We have to learn how to argue maturely. God wants 12 tribes. There's a value in 12 tribes because it's not healthy everyone thinking the same way. You grow through healthy arguments. It's something important to do, but you have to do it maturely. And just because someone argues with you doesn't mean he's your enemy. There's different approaches, and as long as Rav Kook writes about it, I'll end with Rav Kook again, because that's our, I want to bring that idea for Brit Milah, what his purpose is. Rav Kook talks about three ideal, three types of people, three types of ideas. There's idea dati, religious people, we'll call them for our sake Haredim, pretty much. There's idea lumit, nationalism, we call them my kind of friends, the dati lumi. And there's idea musari, like ethical people. We'll call them not the chilonim, but the from chilonim, not from the, no, the chilonim who care about ethics all the time and, you know, who get angry when we do things that are unethical. He says, those are natural phenomena in every society. There's always people into religion, there's people into nationalism, and there's people into ethics. Into moral behavior. No. He says, and usually you don't find all three in one person. But you always find groups of people. You always have nationalists, you always have left-wingers, what do you call them? And you always have religious people. He says, he calls it Kedusha. It's a type of Kedusha. He says, what happens? What should happen is each should see the other as a partner. You build a tripod that way. You need, for a healthy society to run, you need all three values are important. You need nationalism, because otherwise you don't have a country. You need people caring about ethics. You need people caring about religion. But it's hard to develop that in a single person, all three in one. And therefore, people tend to go to extremes. They get passionate about one of them. So he says, when these three forces see the other two as an enemy, that's when things get disrupted. When they see each other as partners, that's when you grow. And therefore, I think it's important that Rav Kook's idea was, is that it's healthy to have healthy, good arguments. It's healthy. Some people think we have to put more, you know, it's got to be more Haredi or more into religion, more nationalism, more ethics. Those are healthy movements, different political parties. But when each one sees the other as an enemy, that's sinat chinam. When each one appreciates, I have my approach, and I'm passionate about my approach, but I appreciate the other approaches, you can have 12 tribes, and you can work together. You can argue responsibly and maturely, and that's how you grow as a nation, that's how you mature. But the second you see each other as the enemy, that's when things fall apart. So hopefully that's what was my title. There's this vision of a nation, also a nation with a vision, and in our Jewish history, after 71 years, we're at a very important crossroads where we're slowly getting out of survival mode, ready for revival mode, and that's what we're arguing over. But there's a value in setting up a nation. It's important, and you can't say, it's not just without a vision, there's nothing. There's a value in simply establishing a nation as a basis to have a vision. But once that nation is established, we have to work on our vision. The Torah gives us guidelines for that vision, and we study the Torah, and we also pray that we can fulfill that. And part of our prayers is not just that we have a nation, but God helps guide us that we make the right decisions. And hopefully our tefillot on Yom HaTzimut reflect that, not just that this will be the Geula, but not that this will be just Geula, but it'll be Geula. It'll be also the fourth cup, that we become a nation that are able to serve God. We can use our nationhood as a tool in the service of God that'll help mankind in general. Okay, thank you. Yeah, have a minion now for Shafri. Thank you.
I want to thank Rabbi Liebtag with a wonderful presentation. Just want to remind everyone that tomorrow morning Shacharit with Hillel is at 6 a.m. Everyone is urged to attend 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. Dunkin' Donuts speech, but also we're having kibbutz kal now. We have to please remove the chairs from fourth side of the shul and help take out the two tables, please. Everyone, where's the more dimness and ground and Hulash Lema?
Said saved, right? Yeah, 57 minutes. That's fine. Oh, it's still on. Okay.